Welcome back to Cairo Nights. On the line, as per usual, is Stacey Jo Rost, a.k.a. Weird Tweet. Stacey Jo Rost.
That's what they call me.
Before we go inside of my mind, and right as I close my Outlook account so that I don't get any emails, let me... see, Stacey, this is my biggest problem. One, let me say before we talk about my biggest problem, is that this hour is brought to you by Chef Store. But two, whenever I do the show, I leave my Outlook account open for all 3 hours. And so every so often there's that blue noise and it throws me off and the audience gets upset. So I have to start remembering to turn it off. But that is my biggest problem, Stacey Jo Rost, is that I always have it on and I always kind of leave it on, Stacey. And it is embarrassing and it's a habit that I need to break.
Yeah, no, it's pretty shameful. But I get it. You're popular. You get emails. Like, some of us aren't so lucky.
I get emails.
I have my Outlook on all day long, and the only thought I just got a newsletter. That's it.
You only get the newsletter?
I mean, you can brag about that. That's fine.
I get letters from everybody all the time. They're like, hey, Jack, great show. Hey, Jack, we love you. Jack, you're the best. We should pay you more money. So I was listening to some conservative podcasts this morning, as I'm known to do, and many of them were talking about Carl Nassib coming out as the first active NFL player to come out as gay. And they were talking about it in such a way that I found to be off-putting. Because my...
Shocking.
They were saying, why does this matter? Because Michael Sam was a thing 6 or 7 years ago. Michael Sam came out, drafted as a gay guy, went to go. Who did he play for? Do you remember who he played for?
He was drafted by the Rams and was released before the start of the regular season. So he was never actually an active player in the league. He was on a practice squad after that with Dallas.
So they were trying to recontextualize the this event, and they were trying to make it seem as if this is not a big deal because of why? Because of Michael Sam. I heard some other people say, well, Pete Buttigieg is the transportation secretary and he's gay.
What?
And yeah, I know. It's like weird non-arguments.
Out of nowhere. I mean, Elton John. And you're like, what does this have to do with anything?
Exactly.
What?
And then they were, but they failed to mention any other athlete who has come out as being gay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Stacey Jo, but there's no one in the NBA that has come out as gay, correct?
There are people in the NBA that have come out as gay. Again, the number of athletes who, after their career or before it, in the case of Michael Sam, who have come out as gay is very small. It has happened, but this is genuinely the first time that an active player in the NFL, like active player on a roster, has come out as gay.
Right. And so it is something to be celebrated, I think, particularly during Pride Month. And one of the things that I think will be the death knell of conservatism and the death knell of right-leaning politics is when people who are in my camp, when it comes to talking politics, look at an event like this and they dismiss it. And they are condescending and they say, well, what about Michael Sam 6 years ago? Or they say, what about Pete Buttigieg? And my whole argument is that this is an active player. He's 28 years old, I believe.
I don't know. It's around there, I would assume.
So he still has probably what, like another couple of years in the league potentially.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
He decided to donate $100,000 to the Trevor Project, which is an organization focused on crisis intervention and suicide prevention for kids who are LGBTQ. This is a great moment, not only in sports, but a great moment to be an American. This is a great moment that everybody should say, wow, thanks, guy. Thanks, one, for coming out and representing, you know, the LGBTQ community. But then also, hey, thanks for encouraging everybody to donate money to kids. And instead, what I got from my fellow conservative commentator, Stacey Jo, was basically something like this. Who cares? Who cares? I don't care. I don't care. Michael Sam was the thing. I don't care about gay people anymore. And by saying that, they miss the importance of it, and they miss how relevant it is.
Well, and how relevant it is to, like, it is possible, and again, this is going to blow some people's minds, it is possible that something can matter more to someone else than it does to you, and for that to be okay. I do think that this should matter to everyone. It should be something where you think, wow, how cool that we live in a country where someone can, a public figure, an athlete, can come out as gay and not be, you know, persecuted for that. Like, it should be something where you think, like, wow, this is a country where we celebrate differences. And I think instead it's become something where someone is, even so far as, like, shamed for, quote, like, making it a big deal. I think that's what I kept seeing. And it is hard not to read. I know that there are some people who say, genuinely, I don't care if he's gay or not.
Right.
Great. I think that there are, though, some people who say, who cares? And it's not actually who cares. It's stop talking about this.
Yes, exactly.
Because it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is you play. And that's actually part of the bigger problem, because visibility is extremely important. It's extremely important, too, when it comes to underrepresented communities. In sports, LGBTQ people are underrepresented. And Carl is not the only gay person in the NFL. Like, I would bet money on that, that he's not the only gay professional athlete. He's also not the only gay person who is interested in or loves sports. And this is where it becomes an especially important story to me, because there are a couple things we know to be true from several scientific surveys and studies and everything. And I'm kind of going to summarize them all together at once. But some of the things we know to be true are that gay youth either commit suicide or consider or have suicidal ideation at much higher rates than their heterosexual peers.
Correct.
We also know that involvement in sports, particularly team sports, is great for mental, physical, emotional health, for self-esteem, and for feelings of acceptance. I'm not equating these two things, but what I'm saying is that participation in sports overall has been hugely important for development of young people. We also know from these same studies that LGBTQ youth experience at higher rates than their peers harassment and discrimination in sports, and as a result feel more unsafe in sports environments like fields and locker rooms and PE classes than their peers. All of this is a connected problem. So when you see a player who you know, comes out and says, hey, I'm gay, you know, like, no, it's just, and by the way, everyone getting mad at him making, quote, a spectacle. That's something I kept saying on our text line today. He's not making a spectacle. He came out and explained in his own video, hey, I'm normally a very private person, but I feel representation and visibility is important. So I would just like to take a second to say this. I'm also donating to this cause. All right, bye guys. That's all it was. That's all it was. And he hasn't done any interviews since then. He hasn't even posted more videos since then.
Yeah.
It was just this one statement to say, I am someone who knows what that feeling is like. I think that Carl is speaking to a broader audience, saying, like, hey, you know, like, I hope we can get to a point where no one needs to make an announcement video that they're out. I also think that the kind of entitlement that comes with saying, I don't care about this, completely overlooks that in some ways, Carl isn't speaking to you or for you, and that that's okay.
Oh.
And you don't need to be the subject of this right now. And I think some people who feel kind of entitled to that without knowing that they are, feel very slighted by it. And it's like, it is possible that this message might resonate more with gay youth that are interested in sports, or just with people who feel that football should be more welcoming, that it would be healthier if it was, if more people felt welcome there. It is possible that that doesn't deeply resonate with you in the same way, and that you can still care about it. And it just, there's a sense of entitlement there that, and people are going to get defensive and hate me when they hear that. But there is a sense of entitlement there that's off-putting to me, of that kind of, who cares, this isn't a big deal, just because it doesn't matter to you.
Right.
Like, it is possible that there are things in this world that matter and are not necessarily immediately for you.
Yeah, and I will say this, I have two thoughts on this, Stacey. One is that as I was kind of scrolling through the article at The Atlantic, there's a comment section, which if I could go to The Athletic, I might tell them, you might want to get rid of your comment section altogether. But if you go through this, there are 302 comments as at the time that we are live right now. And it says, if you go down through the comments, it says, all too often, this comment has been flagged and is currently under moderated review. Now, if you scroll through this, I'm just going to do it really quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 out of the first 30. So just to take that quick sample size, that if you were to kind of blow that out, one could say that throughout this entire kind of comment thread, it's about a 60-40 split between comments that have been removed. Those comments weren't removed for saying, hey, Carl Nassib, thanks a lot for coming out. We support you.
Right.
They were removed because they said horrible, awful things. And my other thought is kind of in conjunction with that, and it goes like this. I feel as if I am on a one-man mission to try to save right-leaning politics, and it's the people that I'm trying to help that are the biggest threat to right-leaning politics. I'm the biggest advocate for small government. I'm the biggest advocate for individual rights. I'm the biggest advocate for the sanctity of a private business. You might even say, Stacey Joe Ross, that I'm kind of like a Randian thinker, like a Randian free market type thinker where I go around and I think that we should all be able to have our private businesses, yada, da, 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 da. The second that I come out and I say, hey, I like the idea that Carl Nassib came out and he came out as gay and that he donated money to charity. People go, Jack Stein, you are such a liberal apologist. Jack Stein, you're not really conservative. Jack Stein, you're not really blah, 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 blah. How could you? You're such a liberal apologist. And it ruins any opportunity for right-leaning politics, which is my new phrase that I've been trying to use. It ruins the opportunity for it to grow because people are still stuck in this realm of being awful human beings. And as somebody who's trying to kind of drag everybody out of that and say, hey, be nicer to gay people. Hey, be nicer to trans people. Hey, understand the concerns of the minority community. Trying to physically pull these people. And I'm like, we can still be pro-life. We can still be, separation of church and state. We can still be all of these things. But culturally, you have to stop doing that stuff. And they go, no, no, still going to be mean to Carl Nassib on a regular basis.
Well, and it's just, first of all, it's just ugliness, right? Yeah. Like, if your brand of politics, and this is a very narrow, I'm speaking to a narrow group right now. If your brand of politics praises, like, homophobic comments towards someone on a like chat thread,
yeah,
over just genuinely being like, oh, good for him, and then moving on, that's a problem. And I think the problem that especially right-leaning politics has is that kind of narrowing of in trying a little too much overlap between traditional social conservatism and you know, how people with right-leaning politics, things they might otherwise care about, you leave out people that would otherwise vote with you and that would otherwise be in your group.
Exactly.
I'm not a right-leaning political person. I'm pretty far left-leaning, but
how dare
this
you?
This sounds ridiculous.
How dare
no,
you?
This sounds ridiculous to be like, I have friends that are conservative. I have a very close friend who is conservative and also religiously conservative, and was talking to this person this morning about the Carl Nassib news. And we were having a conversation similar, Jack, to the one that you and I had yesterday with finding the middle ground.
Right.
It doesn't make you a bad person if you aren't quite sure how to digest this news, but also recognize that your brand of how you want to live your life isn't applicable to everyone else, and that sometimes for someone else's best life, or for them to live their life to their fullest and happiest and healthiest, like, there needs to be a divergence there, and you have to allow room for that, that there needs to be a middle ground that
right.
you are comfortable with, and it's a byproduct of you being in a society with lots of different ideas and lots of different people. And this person, I was like, you don't have to feel guilty if you're digesting how you feel about it. It's only if you're out here like spewing hate should you, I think, change the way that you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I think that I wonder if for some of those like some of the frustrations you're talking about, part of it is just this narrowing of how you have to feel about something. And there's so many people they cut out of that at a time when you need that voting block.
Yeah. And well, it basically kind of goes like this, right? Is that I heard one commentator said, I think it's fine that Carl is gay, but as long as he doesn't shove it down my throat like Colin Kaepernick did with BLM, I'm fine with it. He said, I have no problem with it, right? Now, the issue with that is can you imagine somebody in the 1940s coming out and saying, I'm fine with Jackie Robinson, I'm totally fine with him playing baseball, as long as he doesn't shove his blackness down my throat? If we looked back on that comment in context, we would say,
right,
that is a racist comment. And that's what I'm trying to tell people now, is that when you say stuff like that, for as quote unquote as accepting as you might be, understand mm-hmm. that people will view that in the way that you do not intend it to sound. And you will end up sounding like a vicious homophobe by saying, oh, yeah, you know, I don't care if he plays football. I just care as long as he doesn't bring a rainbow flag out and on the field, man, because the politics don't belong out on the field. That kind of stuff is going to rip conservatism apart, and it's going to rip right-leaning politics apart to the point where it's indistinguishable between a bigoted cultural movement and an actual political movement.
And there's so much hyperbole there too, with like the idea, I was seeing it all the time, someone was texting in like, oh, should we build a statue to Carl Nassib now? And I was like,
yes,
you're attaching so much more, I don't even know what the word would be, to what he did.
Right.
He came out and in his own video, in the video itself, explained why he was doing it, said he's normally a very private person, ended it by saying what he was doing action-wise as a result, like why he ended up making the video and what the action was to follow, and then just ended the video. That's all that happened. And there's been so much attached to it. I think it's in part because of the conversations that people like me and you are having afterward as a result that Carl isn't a part of. But yeah, it's like this idea of, also, I don't even want to give light or time to it, but it is really frustrating dealing with people being like, oh, should we have like someone coming out and announcing they're straight now? Where's my straight parade? And it's like, I don't even, these comments will always rear their head. And right. I don't know how to tell people that, like, well, I don't know. Have you ever been like shot and killed because you're straight?
Right.
Because last time I checked, like there were actual instances of people being harassed, persecuted, murdered even because they were gay or because of the color of their skin or whatever. So there is a reason that we have these conversations. And I'm sorry if in that moment you don't feel special, but like it's important to recognize when someone comes out and as a member of that community and says, you know, like, I guess draws attention in his case to a cause. And it was very benign. And God, so much of today, Jack, has driven me crazy. And I completely understand you seeing it from,
right.
It's so interesting us seeing it from our lenses, right?
Yeah.
Of how we work. Like you're seeing it as, oh gosh, this frustrates me in general about being a right-leaning voter or caring about these ideals very, very much, seeing them ostracize so many people. And for me, I'm like, as part of a sports community, it's so frustrating to feel like, God, I could, you know, I want this place to be welcoming, and it is frustrating to hear people in that community spew such hateful things over something that I think makes the community as a whole better. So it's been a frustrating day.
Stacey Jo, I'll tell you this, though. This segment was not frustrating because we have to get out of here now, but I appreciate you once again, Stacey Jo Rost, coming on and you're willing to have the difficult conversations that no one else is willing to have. So I think that everybody in the chat, everybody in the text line should thank Stacey Jo Rost again.
Leave us alone.
For coming on and saying good job. So we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, got a whole lot more coming down for you. We'll be right back after this. I wanted to talk to everybody out there who is of the male persuasion. I wanted to kind of talk to everybody out there. If you're a guy, if you're a dude, if you're a man, if you're a bro, listen in. Ladies, take a quick break. I'm just talking to the dudes. Go ahead and turn off the radio for about the next 10 minutes because I only want to talk to guys. All right, bros. So there is a story over at My Northwest that says that a sister says that Seattle's eviction moratorium makes it impossible for her to kick out her brother. And in reading this story, I was thinking, well, I could complain about the eviction moratorium and I could complain about everything that's going awful and terrible in Seattle, but I thought it might be more beneficial for us if we talk about kind of the essence of what it means to be a man. Of what it means to be an independent man, of what it means to be what I will refer to as a self-contained man. I'm a successful guy. I'm a successful man. So my advice to many of the guys out there is to take a page out of Uncle Jay's playbook and understand what unhealthy behavior looks like and what childish behavior looks like so you don't end up like this guy. A Seattle woman says that she let her brother move into her house to help him out during a rough time. Now she wants to sell, and he won't move out thanks to the eviction moratorium. She's a young woman, her name's Holly, and she was talking to Dory Monson and saying that her brother is paying her $200 a month to live in her house. This is not good, my guy. She said, I let him move in because I figured he'd just get another one of his big IT jobs, because that is what Seattle is known for. She estimates that she could get $2,300 per month for rent, but she says that she can't get legal help now because of the eviction moratorium. Again, just as a recap, Jenny Durkin extended the eviction moratorium through September 30th. Why? I have no idea. And Dory reminded Holly that there is also a winter eviction ban in effect in the city, and she said that their relationship has just completely fallen apart. Now, all of that is on the brother. I feel for Holly, and I feel for people out there who are homeless or people who are facing homelessness, but you have to think about it like this. As a man, as being a self-contained man, you need to prepare yourself for when things like this happen in your life. I'll tell you, I've worked so many double jobs. I've worked 13-hour days, 14-hour days, 16-hour days. I have done everything in my power to prevent myself from being in a circumstance where I was homeless. I was homeless in my life for about a year. I've talked about it often here on Cairo Nights. And one of the things when I reflect on it, aside from the drug addiction in my life, one of the things that contributed to my homelessness was a very childlike view of the world. I believed that people owed me things. I believed that everybody had to give me something. I believed fundamentally that I was being wronged by society. And that is why I didn't want to get a job. And I was like, I'm just going to play guitar down by the wharf, man, and my life is going to be fine. I had a very childlike view of things. And it wasn't until a friend of mine came to me and said, hey, come and work in my stock room for $10 an hour, where I really started to learn how to be a man, what it meant to actually go to work, what it actually meant to have to be on time, what it meant to be accountable to other people. This guy who is staying in his sister's home does not care about his relationship with his sister. He does not care how much it costs her. He does not care about the effect that this is having on his life. He believes that he is owed something, in this case, somebody's house. He believes that he does not have to move out, and he believes that he can just stay there because, again, his sister owes him something. This is a very childlike way of thinking about things. And if I could go to this guy, if I could talk to this guy, I would say, listen, man, what's more valuable to you? Your dignity and your self-respect and your relationship with your sister, or the fact that you can impose your very childlike will on other people simply because you don't want to move out? You've been paying your sister $200 a month. You haven't saved up a penny. Have you been looking for other jobs? Have you thought about moving somewhere? I'll tell you this. When I was homeless and I was trying to get my act together, I moved all over the place. I was sleeping on somebody's couch. I would rent rooms. I rented a storage shed at a certain point in time. I did everything that I could to prevent from being homeless. I took every job that I could. As a matter of fact, when I decided to go back to school, I was working and going to school at the same time. I did everything that I possibly could. And this is why I want to talk to my bros out there, my guys out there. Because part of being a self-contained man is recognizing that sometimes you have to suck it up. For as much as it sucks. For as much as having a 16-hour day sucks. For as much as having having to find a new place to live, or having to deal with some lady in your life or some other guy in your life, you have to suck it up to a certain extent because you are a man. Now, you might be saying, well, Jack Stein, that's really harsh. What kind of message are we telling little boys to suck it up? I'm not saying that to little boys. I'm saying that to other full-grown men. If I was talking to a little boy, what I would say is, hey, you want to be a self-contained guy, right? You want to be the kind of guy who can take care of himself, right? And that little kid would be like, yeah, Jack, I do. Yeah, Uncle Jack, I want to be a self-contained guy. I would say, all right, guy, what do you think a self-contained man looks like? What do you think a self-contained, respectable young man looks like? And that little kid would probably be like, I don't know. And then I would say, well, it looks like that guy gets a job. It looks like that guy pays his rent. It looks like that guy pitches in as much as he can to help out his sister or his mom or his dad or whatever it is. It looks like that guy, when things get tough, is able to communicate with his mom or his dad or his sister and say, hey, I'm in a hard spot. Help me out and let me help you out. A self-contained man does not do this thing where he leeches off of other people and takes advantage of the kindness of other people. That is what a petulant child does. That is what a tantrum-throwing child does because they don't know how to express their emotions. In many ways, we have lost sight of what a man looks like or what a man is supposed to be. And I don't mean that, again, as in like, big burly chest and hairy arms and a big old beard. And, hey, I'm smoking Marlboros. What I mean is about what it means to be a respectable individual. And more importantly, recognizing your role as a man to say, I do not want to be a burden on anybody. I don't want to take advantage of anybody. What I want to do is be the kind of guy, be the kind of man that people want to help because they know I'm a trustworthy individual and they know that I won't take advantage of the eviction moratorium or I won't take advantage of their stock room or I won't take advantage of their living room or whatever it is. They know that they can trust you. This guy is ruining his relationship with his sister. He is proving to his sister that he's no longer a trustworthy guy, that he's actually just a layabout. And that he's willing to take advantage of her. I mean, I couldn't imagine at this stage in my life as a 33-year-old man doing this to somebody in my life, doing this to somebody in my family, doing this to my mom or to my cousins or to my aunt or whatever. So take a page out of your Uncle Jay's book if you're out there and you're a guy. And realize that you have so much capacity as a man to do so much in your life to benefit other people. And that is called being a self-contained man, in which you recognize all of your abilities and all of your skill sets and how great you are in your masculinity. And you don't need to end up like this guy, taking advantage of other people just because it makes your life more comfortable. We'll take a really quick break to wrap all of this up right after this. Back to Cairo Night. So Shane, what's on my mind is that my back is still out. And what I mean by that is my back is I was running the other day, as you know, and I felt a pull in my lower back muscle and I pulled it because I was running so fast. And it is almost as painful as it was yesterday, but it hasn't really gone anywhere. This has happened to me before previously. This happens to me about once a year where I push my body to its ultimate extreme and then something breaks. It's never my knees. It's never my ankles. It's never my hips. it's always the same spot in my back, and I have no idea how to fix it, Shane. It's happened to me multiple times at this point.
Well, have you consulted the help from the wonderful Dr. Williams and Auntie? Did he have any advice
yeah.
for you?
Okay, Dr. Z's basically, his advice is always the same thing, which is that I have a muscle that has slipped out of place and that it will go back into place, but I have to lay down. And he says, I just have to take a bunch of ibuprofen and Tylenol and lay down. But then I tell him, I say, Dr. Z, for my job, I either have to be sitting or standing. I cannot do radio flat on the ground because that would be ridiculous, right? I'd be doing radio like this, Shane, where I'm saying, hey, let's all talk about radio. It just is not something that I could physically do. So it puts me in a weird circumstance where his advice to me is to, again, try to... not move a whole lot, lay down, put ice on it, put heat on it, put ice on it. It's great advice. It's worked every single time, but I can't do that while I'm working. And so I'm in excruciating physical pain as I have been for about 3 hours now.
Yeah, that's always miserable. But here's the thing, Jack. I know you have that new arm, that new mic arm that you bought for yourself.
I do,
recently.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm pretty sure, because you put it on wrong the first time, but I think maybe if you just take it off and you can fasten it some sort of way, you can maybe put a small cot and have a little heating pad underneath, and then you can just lay down and just have the mic arm be upside down and then have it come down over the top of you. So you can lay there with your, you know, with your legs crossed at a nice comfortable position, put a little heat pad on the back, and then you put your headphones on, and then I take care of the rest, Jack. This is a possibility. You can soldier through this.
But this problem is, Shane, is how then do I read the headlines? How do I read the stories? I can't commit them to memory.
Well, what I think you either need to do is that you might need to get Sarah's help, maybe hold the laptop over your head, or you might need to start putting Boo Bear to work to earn his keep, and maybe have him bring over some pre-typed notes. You could just bring them over one at a time.
He can, like, carry them in his little mouth, and he can drop them off to me. Say this about Jay Inslee. No, so I'll tell you this as well, buddy, is that this is not fun for me to be in this level of discomfort. And so I appreciate you, Shane, and everything that you do and everything that you facilitate the show to happen, because it would not happen without you, buddy. And I appreciate everything that you do. So, Shane, what is on your mind, my friend?
Last night, I got convinced to go out to West Seattle to hang out with one of my buddies. Had a bunch of, you know, life stories and life decisions that we needed to talk about. But as we left his apartment, we were going to go to one of our local watering holes. And Jack, have you seen some of these scooters that are around the city of Seattle?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I finally got on the scooter hype, man. And let me tell you, life changing. People who
no, I hate those things.
They're so much fun. I went around cruising last night, probably around 11 o'clock, around West Seattle, just cruising in the nice cold air, bombing hills. Almost rode all the way down to Alakai. It was an absolute blast, and I was just scooting the whole time. Big scoot life last night, and it was just like on a whim. He's just like, "Hey, do you want to go get some food or something?" And I was like, close enough. The bridge is open. Went over and just ripped around on scooters. And this sounds like, Shane, is this really what's on your mind? And the answer is yes, because I think that people should get into this because it's fun. It's a little, of course, some of the people who ride them are obnoxious. But the thing is, late night scooter gangs, get some scooters together with the friends. There's a lot of good hills in West Seattle. Check it out.
Yeah.
That's all that's on my
late mind. Late night scooter gangs. Are you guys getting up to any trouble outside of, like, ripping donuts and going down hills?
No. I went down the middle of the road at one point, but it was pretty dead at night. So I was jumping off. I was doing, you know, some bunny hops off the curbs. I was really ripping it. I was trying to get some air. Yeah. Going over everything, every obstacle I could find.
So, but my concern about those things is, and this is me being an old man, is that someone is going to see you doing that, and then, or they're going to, there's some kid is going to see them doing that, and they're going to want to get one of the scooters, and they get on the scooters, and they end up with a broken arm, and it's a whole ordeal, right?
I mean, yeah, but you know, if you want to be rad, you got to do rad things. So, I mean, if the kid's going to try to be rad and he gets hurt, it's the price you got to pay, little man.
Yeah, no, that little guy, if he breaks his arm, no, I totally hear you on that. Well, you know what, Shane? Here's the thing I like about you, Shane, is that you still engage with the kind of the pleasantries of youth. And when you tell me stuff like that, it reminds me of the stuff that I was doing when I was 25. And it brings a lot of joy to me because then it reminds me of the crazy stuff I used to do with like bikes and riding around with your bros and being out till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. All that stuff that I don't do anymore because I'm old and my back gets thrown out because I've run too fast. So on that note, Shane Peterson, thanks again for doing the show. Just doing a great job, Shane, if I can give you a thumbs up in that regard.
Thanks, man.
And we will be back tomorrow. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in exactly 21 hours. So don't breathe. Don't move. Don't go anywhere with a whole lot more news. For Shane Peterson and for Lisa Brooks, I wish everybody a very good night, and we will see you tomorrow. Goodbye. Sorry, but I'm just thinking of the ride. Yeah.